Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to the Runner's World podcast with me, Rick Pearson.
Me, Ben Hobson.
And me, Jane Maguire.
Today we're talking about running in China with James Poole. Some exciting news from the sprint world for you. Usain Bolt became a father of two twins. The greatest names. They've got the greatest names.
Surely it would just be father of twins. Two twins would be four.
That's true, actually. No, just father of twins. That's true, actually.
imagine four
babies.
Just incredible.
That's like a relay. That's potentially a relay team. It's a relay.
That's
team.
A relay.
That's so quick.
Oh my god! Straight away.
Listen to these names: Saint Leo Bolt, which is good. I'm into that. But better still, Thunderbolt.
Oh, Thunderbolt! What a name!
Amazing name.
I think it's genuinely unfair on Saint Leo that his brother is called Thunder.
Is there another Bolt though? Is there a better Bolt?
I think he's got another older child as well.
No, I mean as in. Instead of Saint Leo, is there like Thunderbolt, Lightning? Lightning Bolt?
Lightning would have been good.
Lightning would have been good. Saint Leo is still nice though, if Usain is listening to this. I don't want to slag off his kid's name.
Oh, wonderful. Congratulations on your children. Both great names. I've immediately assumed Thunder is a boy.
I think Thunder's a boy.
Right, fine, good. Yeah, amazing names. Congratulations to the Bolts. There you go, twins. How much do you think people would expect those children to be athletes?
Yeah, a lot of pressure. You know what I mean? I think it's a bit like, you might be well advised not to be. It's a bit, because it's a bit like, you know, being John Lennon's son and being a musician. It's a big act to follow, isn't it?
But imagine doing PE and being called Thunderbolt. You've got to be quick or you're...
You've got an advantage. You've got maybe, yeah. Part of me thinks not going into the family business, it might be the best move, because you're going to do well to be quicker than dad, aren't you? Really,
he could be a drummer.
Yeah, that's good. It's a good name for lots of things.
Journalism.
Weatherman.
Yes.
Come on, journalism. Thunderbolt.
Thunderbolt with this news exclusive. That's
it's
quite
just
good.
Great.
Yeah, it's true.
Oh, wait, some other good news. The Black Trail Runners, who've been on the podcast previously, they took on the Ramsey Round in Scotland last week. So anyone who doesn't know the Ramsey Round, it's basically Scotland's answer to the Bob Graham, but it was of particular interest to Black Trail Runners because the founder, Charlie Ramsey, is a black man, which actually a lot of people don't realise. I think he's actually sort of assumed that he's a kind of white Scottish man, but no, he's a black man, and that was a kind of big reason why they wanted to kind of honour him and what he'd done. And they went up last week and took on some of the gnarlier parts of the route.
Including Ben Nevis?
Including Ben Nevis, yeah.
Well, there we go. Well, congratulations to them.
Yeah, congratulations to them. And I spoke with one of the members, Zuki, and he said that he spoke with an older white hiker who was curious about what they were doing. I told him about Black Trail Runners and how we're trying to open up the access to the trails. It was well received. It was a really positive exchange, but we need to keep coming back to these places to keep showing up until it becomes normal. So I think that's very much a sort of raison d'etre to sort of make coming to the trails something that people of all ethnicities and backgrounds do, which is of course the right thing.
Yeah, 100%.
Jane, what have you been doing running wise?
Well, a lot of running. Well, I was running in the heat and I was like, I love this. This is my time. I love running in the summer. And then I went out to do my 10-mile run on Friday because I'm moving house. So it's all horribly stressful. And what was that torrential rain. I gave up at 8 miles and went into Asda. I just was like, what the hell? Just stood there.
Seeking refuge in Asda.
Literally. So went into the big Asda and walked around because I was like, is there a small Asda? Has anyone ever found one? Went into Asda and just walked around because and then I was so angry at myself for the rest of the day that I didn't just, because I was already drenched, but I went out wearing like a shorts and a vest top, and I was freezing, which is why I had to wait in Asda for...
It's not just the mountains that we'll talk about with James later. It's knowing the weather conditions for even a local 10-mile race. If you don't get it right with your kit...
You're in Asda.
You're in Asda.
Suddenly you're in Asda.
So yeah, that was my running fail of the week. And I don't know if I'm going to have a chance to do a long run and make up for it this week, but... I will make up for that, and I will be more prepared and always carry a rain jacket and a down jacket and an umbrella.
Perfect. It's a good
combo. Ben, you've been racing again?
No.
You got the bit between your teeth?
No, I've been doing the opposite, and I've been procrastinating and delaying runs on a daily basis to the point of expertise, I would say now. Oh, I'll go later. Oh no, I've got to do that first. Oh, I've just eaten lunch. Gotta give it a couple of hours before I go. Oh, it's a bit late now. The kids are around. I'll do it when the kids are gone to bed. God, I'm tired now. The kids are asleep. I'll do it tomorrow. Oh no, it's raining now. I'm not gonna go out today. I have been doing that for about 10 days, I reckon. No, not that long, but for the week. So, and I'm gonna say it now. After this podcast is finished, I'm gonna go for a run, and I probably won't. So that's been my running at the moment. What about you?
Oh, that's good. I went for a run on Saturday morning. Me and my good mate George Bull, and we went for about an hour and a half, which I'm starting to think that's the ideal amount of time for a long run. 90 minutes,
yeah,
perfect. You don't really need to carry much for that. It's nice. You're still putting in a decent amount of time, but you're not like exhausted at the end. And also importantly, ended up at a bakery, which I think is a nice way. That makes a run better. Just bakery's about a mile away, then just walk back home with a croissant.
Nice. Yeah. Is that a plain croissant though?
Mate, a plain croissant, Ben, you don't need anything on a croissant. It's like a pizza. People think more things on a pizza is better. It's not.
I'm not saying it, but a delicious all butter croissant, absolutely. A fantastic. Yeah. But after an hour and a half of running, I think I'd probably want maybe like an apricot fruit slice or something, a bit more a bit more jazzy. Apple turnover. Like
a cinnamon bun, or something.
Do you put jam with it, Rick?
No. Just I'd add a coffee.
What coffee do you have?
Just had a flat white.
Flat white and a croissant. It's pretty generic, Rick. I expected more.
No, I know what you mean. It's not particularly imaginative, is it? But that's what I wanted. You know what I mean? That's what I wanted.
You earned it. Don't let anyone bring you down.
Yeah. Especially me and Jane.
Yeah, exactly. I was feeling all right about it until I came on this podcast. Suddenly I'm some sort of bakery boy.
Everyone listening is probably like, what? That's what I get.
Anyway, tell us, what do you order after your long run? Are you a flat white person? Are you an Americano? A croissant? A cinnamon roll? Let us know. podcast@runnersworld.co.uk.
Oh, again, those hottest of all the takes that from our audience. Right, should we talk to our guest of the week?
Let's do it. Guest of the week. Here in the studio. Guest of the week. Sometimes on the phone. Could be an athlete. Could be a physio. Or a complete unknown. The running world was shaken recently by the tragic news that 21 people died while taking part in an ultra marathon in China. The mountainous 100-kilometre race took place in high winds and freezing temperatures, and the runners are understood to have died from hypothermia. An investigation by the Chinese government is taking place, with many people suggesting the tragedy was a result of human error as much as natural disaster. One UK runner who has raced in China more than most is James Poole. Having completed the Ultra Gobi despite suffering from hypothermia halfway through, James has some key insights into what makes China an enticing but also potentially hazardous destination for ultra runners. So, James, welcome to the Runners World podcast.
Thanks, guys. Pleasure to be on board.
What first sort of interested you in running in China?
Well, I've always been interested in running in other places that aren't my home place. So, I mean, I guess China is the kind of most extreme version of that. I mean, even just to visit, ignore the running part of it, just to go there. A place that has been sort of cut off from the Western world for so long is an interesting place. Just to go to Beijing or Shanghai or just the major cities is in itself is exciting. But then obviously if you combine that with running and getting to see things that you you wouldn't do in a car or you wouldn't do in any other way, is a real experience. I have to be honest. With what's happened going on in the tragedy, I hope it doesn't limit our ability to go there, because it's an incredible place to visit, to run. It's one of my favourite places. As soon as I can get back, I will.
So it hasn't put you off. This news hasn't put you off racing somewhere like China.
No, absolutely not. And I think I haven't. Obviously, the circumstances are vague, and I suspect, given it's China, we'll never fully understand quite what happens, because you have to understand the Chinese culture, and the Chinese culture is that you never want to lose face. So the fact that this happened and it's suddenly in the spotlight internationally is a very bad thing for those involved, and obviously they will want to limit, they want to downplay that, because it will be show losing face on the international stage is very poor show.
A piece that was published actually in Outside Online recently said that the tragedy wasn't surprising, because health and safety of races in China is often lacking. Was that your experience racing out there?
No, absolutely not at all, actually. But it's a cultural thing. And so the races that I've done, I did the UTMB, Gaoligong by UTMB. So it was run on a very UTMB French style. So if anything, it was almost too restrictive. As UTMB is run on very strict rules, there's no help outside of given points. If you're helped in the mountain somewhere by your friend, you potentially get disqualified. They took the rules of UTMB and applied it to China, which was kind of weird, because there's a place where hadn't organized races, hadn't really employed a sort of Western way into a Chinese culture. So it was a bit tricky, and the Chinese people were over the moon. All the aid station people were like thrilled that we were running in their country, and they wanted to help us as much as they could. And then they were getting told off that they weren't meant to hand us water, or they weren't meant to fill our bottles up. We had to do it ourselves. It was very, very safe. I mean, Gaoligong by UTMB couldn't fault it. The race in the Gobi Desert, by the nature of running 400 plus kilometers, is going to be there's an inherent risk. And when you sign up, you know that. And we had spot trackers, and there was a control center, which I only saw after I finished, that had everyone's locations on a giant map. They would send vehicles out and check on people if they were deviating a long way from where they were meant to be. I mean, I've never felt more safe, to be honest, other than when I was obviously on my own in the middle of nowhere. But from an organizational standpoint, I've been in races in Europe that I felt have been way more dangerous.
And have you ever experienced hypothermia? Because from my very kind of limited background, hypothermia is hypothermia, and you treat it the same way in England, in China, everywhere. But have you ever dealt with it?
Oh yeah, I mean, like, I've had hypothermia in European races, and in the Gobi Desert, I got very severe hypothermia, and the medics, unbeknown to me, talked about evacuating me from the race because I was in big trouble. Everyone was in big trouble. It was minus 15 at night, and the winds off the Tibetan plateau were making it colder still. But what you have to understand about China is it's not so much the organization, it's the culture. So with Gobi Desert, we had XR medics had been flown there from the UK. So we had a team of UK medics on hand to look after typically the Western athletes. And the Chinese runners had Chinese medics. And what you have to understand is that in China, hypothermia isn't a thing. Or maybe it is, but it's not dealt with in the same way as it is here. Chinese athletes at Gobi were going out with their sleeping bags wrapped around there in the freezing cold, because there's lots of things like the way the wind blows and from what direction is not necessarily a bad thing. It could be a good thing or a bad thing, but it's more spiritual. And it could be that if it blows from the west, then it's bringing you bad luck. It's blowing from the west and it's coming off the Tibetan plateau, so it's going to drop temperature by 10 degrees. It's not thought of like that. And again, I don't want to speak for every single race and everything in China, but when I spoke to the medics after my race in Gobi, they were like somewhat horrified by the fact that the way that the Chinese medics were dealing with the Chinese athletes was very different to that of the European and international athletes who are there. So there is this sort of Chinese medicine type element that comes into factor in some of the Chinese races. And it's not that they don't take it seriously, it's just a different thing. And I don't know how it can be. It's fairly scientific, right? If your body temperature reaches a certain temperature, then you get in a lot of trouble. But that's not the way they see it.
Yeah. Me and Rick were talking about this in the context that perhaps a lot of races have been stifled is the wrong word, but overly controlled perhaps by health and safety, or certainly it's important to have that health and safety in place. Now, is it that there's more responsibility or onus on the individual at these races to just be responsible for themselves? But I don't feel like that can be the case, because surely, or is it the case? I mean, just trying to work out whether or not there's the sense of it's your fault if you take part and something goes wrong, versus if you take part and something goes wrong, then we've got you covered. Do you see what I mean?
I think it's race by race. I mean, I did Western States in 2015. Western States doesn't have a mandatory kit list. You don't, and famously Rob Krah, when he was winning it, wouldn't take a head torch because he knew he was going to run 14 and a half hours and he didn't, and it wasn't going to be dark. So why carry something? So, you know, at one end you've got, and the Western States kind of ethos is, if you've qualified and got here, then you're big enough and ugly enough to look after yourself. And I support that, but it doesn't, you know, but you can get to some of these things, these big races with a lot of exposure in a very easy way. I mean, you could do the Thames Path 100, which is a brilliant race but run by Centurion Running. And I know, you know, lots of people have done it. It's 100 miles along the Thames Path. I think it has 1,000 feet of vertical. It's held in beginning of May. It's pretty, you know, you're only ever 5 minutes from a road. It's pretty tame. You're not going to get yourself in any trouble. That qualifies you then to go and do Western States, which again isn't particularly extreme, but it qualifies you to, let's say, UTMB, where there are a lot of restrictions, and I would argue is one of the most races with the most control over competitors. You can go there and do, suddenly you've got 10,000 meters of climbing over 10 mountains with altitude and potentially poor weather and potentially very tricky underfoot conditions. So, you know, or the distance is equal, but everything else is completely different. And I think it comes down to the individual to sign up for these things and be conscious of their own abilities. But no one's going to do that. I mean, we all know everyone's got FOMO. Everyone wants to push themselves to do the hyperbole of the hardest, the longest, the furthest, that drives a lot of people to get involved in these things. And I get it, but so what do you do? People are always going to put themselves in, and I've done it myself, put myself in situations where I'm not sure I can finish this race, or I'm not sure, you know, I mean, one of my bugbears is the mandatory kit list. Mandatory, not maximum. The problem is that people will take the, you know, it'll be inconvenient to carry a big bag over 100 miles. So, you know, people cut the legs off things and they take the tiniest head torch as a backup because it will save them 100 grams. But that's how you get yourself in trouble, because, you know, your main head torch breaks and you're then suddenly you've got something that puts out 50 lumens and is the size of a 50 pence piece, because you were trying. And I think the key one, going back to sort of the Chinese thing, is the down jacket. I mean, I still run the big 100-mile mountain races with a down jacket in my bag, because I've been there when it's 2 o'clock in the morning and you're really tired and you've been going for, you know, 16, 18, 20 hours, doesn't really matter. You're not moving very fast because you're tired and you're perhaps not eating well. You're freezing cold. And that's when you get yourself in a lot of trouble, because you're 2,500 meters up a mountain and there's no one around for you know, another 5K, which might take you 2 hours. So it's just people, you know, need to enter into these things with their eyes open and seek help. Ask, you know, reach out to people who are out there who've done big races. Do it on Instagram, do it on social media somewhere, get some magazines, get some books. There's tons of people who've done big adventures who I know would only be too happy to part, you know, to give out, including me, to give out their knowledge and make the, you know, make things safer and make things more enjoyable.
I think one of the criticisms you could level at this Chinese race in particular would be that the conditions were terrible, James. Like, they were really bad, and they were bad at the start. So it wasn't like, we got kind of blindsided by this storm. Like, they were really bad at the bottom of the mountain. At that point, the onus is on the race organiser, isn't it? Regardless of what country they're in, to stop that race from happening.
Yeah, and I, you know, I don't know, I don't fully understand the risk assessment kind of criteria for China, and I suspect it's a bit the Wild West out there with a lot of this stuff, and I don't know. And my opinion would be, yeah, if there's a risk to life, then you should stop it. I mean, at the end of the day, there's a few people there competing for money and places, but you know, 99% of the people are doing it. It's fun, right? It's running. It's not world peace. It's not, you know, it wasn't the Olympics. It was a relatively small race with people were doing for enjoyment. So, you know, a risk of enjoyment or you're going to die seems like a pretty simple, simple trade-off to me. You know, I mean, and I guess people put their faith in the hands of the organizers with good trust. But I think if it starts badly, I mean, they quite famously, I think 2014 UTMB, where they made a bit of a balls up of it, to be honest, because they stopped and started and stopped, and then they started to start, and it was a shortened route, but it's happened in the past. There are evidence. There's previous cases where people have, you know, stopped races for bad weather, and I've run a few where the course has been changed somewhere during the race, or it's been stopped, and it just, you know, it's the nature of the beast. Once you start to run in the mountains into the wilderness, you have to be, you know, aware that maybe the race won't get to the end of the race, whether by your own ability or whether the race gets stopped by the organisers.
Do you think people underestimate even just listening to you talk, I'm a bit like, oh God, I wouldn't know what to do or what to pack. Do you think people underestimate the weather and the challenge?
Yeah, and they do. You know, if you only need to go up to Snowdon or hike up to Snowdon you know, any of the UK mountains, and you'll find someone in jeans and flip-flops or something up there. And because you can see the summit. And I think to some extent, the big mountains, so let's, you know, the Alps, because it's covered in snow and because they're really high, people tend to be more prepared. You can often get in more trouble. And I know the mountain rescue teams deal with a lot of people who, you know, Snowdon has a cafe on the top. So, you know, how hard can it be? So you go up there with your flip-flops and your jeans, and then all of a sudden the weather closes in and you can't see a thing, and you know, you got the wrong gear on. I think in terms of running, people always, every time I go out to Chamonix, there'll be somebody I know who's going for the first time, and I wouldn't stop people going, but just, you know, better to have the kit with you and not need it than the other way around and get yourself in a lot of trouble. But I think there's this element of sort of trying to game the thing, you know, trying to have the bare minimum and all the time, and people shouldn't be afraid of the mountains. They just have to be respectful of the situation. And I think we can, you know, runners, if you're a road runner and you're doing, you know, 5 or 10 Ks, even a half marathon in the Alps is a very big undertaking. It might only sound, you know, if you've done a road marathon, it's the same distance. It's not the same conditions, and it could take you, you know, 3 or 4 times as long. You know, you never know. I think if you can move in the mountains well, and you're doing 5K an hour, you're probably doing pretty good, which is quite a contrast to maybe doing a half marathon where someone might say, I'm doing 10K or plus an hour, you know, under 2 hour half marathon might take you 3, 4, 5 in the mountains. It's just understanding that it's a different terrain and you have to sort of recalibrate your mind on what that might involve. But I know lots of people have been out who are not experienced and have an amazing time, and they've opened their eyes to traveling and to running in the mountains. And I would never put anybody off. Be plan more than you would normally, and be prepared.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
It seems like there's a rise, James, in kind of more the more extreme end of ultra running. We've seen things like the Barclay. Obviously, there's a kind of Netflix documentary about that, and the Backyard Ultra, and these kind of events that are, they almost play on the fact they're a bit dangerous or a little bit kind of like, say, Wild West.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, does that worry you? Do you think, like, actually maybe an event in the Western world could easily come unstuck by the same way?
100%. I mean, I've been in races where I finished, I did a race in, I won't name it because I don't want to give bad publicity particularly, but I did a race in Gran Canaria. There you go. They pretty much nailed it down. But if I don't say it, it's a bit of a pointless story. So, but if in the first year of their 360 degree race, which I perhaps naively thought was going to be a run around all the most amazing trails of the island, and wasn't, it was like the dirt tracks and goat trails and scrambling around on riverbeds and things on my hands and knees. There was bits there when we had a tracker, but there was bits there where I was scrambling up these mountainous bits where I was grabbing hold of handfuls of things to handle. And they were coming out of my hands, and I was looking down thinking, if I fall off here, you know, I'm dead and no one's going to find me for a day probably, because my tracker's it's not going to be moving. But how long, you know, people, we were also sleeping out there because it was an unmarked, self-sufficient race. So, you know, it's always risk. So you look at PTL, Petit Trot de Lyon, the UTMB race, which is three great changes, or you look at Tour de Gion. These are big, big distance races, and people are always going to do the hyperbole. And I think the hyperbole starts with MDS, which is, you know, notorious for being the hardest foot. It isn't, but being the hardest foot race in the world. And so people sign up for MDS because it's the hardest foot race in the world. I mean, that's the principal reason for doing it, I think. You're bragging rights. And people are always going to, and certain types of people always want to do, you know, the hardest, the longest, the fastest, whatever. It doesn't float my boat personally, that sort of hyperbole thing. But I can see there's certain characters, certain personalities that will want to do that. Mm. And we're never going to, you know, if there's a demand, there'll be a supply, right?
Do you think that the tragedy highlights need for change in these races and how they're put together, or is this just sadly a very tragic but sort of not a one-off, but kind of just, you know, the stars align for it to go really badly wrong?
Yeah, and I think it's down to race directors and down to organise their races as they manage that risk as they see fit, and I think it's down for individuals to prepare themselves in a way that limits the downside as much as they can. I think it's inevitable. The more people, if you have an increase of people doing hyperbole races, toughest races, you're going to end up, by the nature of it, having more people potentially at risk. You know, something's going to happen. And I think if you just put them on tarmac everything and create, then, you know, what's the point? Then there's no longer, they've lost all of their excitement, all of their luster. So I mean, it's no one wants, and I never want, no one wants to see anybody injured or, you know, worse, die on the doing something in the trails, trail running. I mean, I don't have any comparison, but if you looked at climbing or canoeing, you know, paddling, or some of the more extreme, you know, God knows, base jumping, all those things, you know, I suspect the fatalities are much higher, but people are, you know, accepting of it because it's always been the way. And I'm not saying we should accept it, but I think it's probably highlighted a one-off. It probably be good for the overall industry for people to think a bit more about how they put on races and whether, you know, the disappointment of a few hundred people is worth the risk. And, you know, by cancelling it, is that the better thing to do, and disappoint people, or is it put it on and potentially have the potential for things to go? I mean, you can't make them, you can make them less risky by managing the risks. I think if you make them zero risk, you make it a 24-hour track run or something, where, and we only just look at the Euros and see Christian Eriksen, you know, on something that where the most tested individuals on the planet, probably by doctors, and these things happen. And so, you know, it's a really, really sad thing. I think it probably, as the number of races grows, it won't be the last time. I hope it is, but I don't think it will be, because people put themselves at risk.
I think that's it. I think it's just a real reminder that these distances and these types of races are inherently dangerous.
100%. And that's some of the excitement about them. If there was no danger, as I said, it'd be running around on a, you know, a rubber oval until you got bored. I mean, there's degrees of extremeness, I guess. And people, I think, also should, you know, have some respect for the mountains. And the mountains don't care whether you've been running along the Thames path or whether you're, you know, whether you're well trained in the mountains, and it'll do what it'll do. Mother Nature is bigger than all of us, and we have to remember that. You know, a lot of better runners than the people who are out there have got themselves in difficulties. Kilian Jornet, you know, is a great example of having to be rescued off of Agui de Midi when running up there and getting in trouble. So it happens to the best runners in the world. You just have to manage, you know, take your own experience and put that in perspective.
Can we talk about some of the positive experiences, James, you had of running in China? Because it sounds like you're passionate about the running there.
I think Asia as a whole is a super exciting place, and that's a very big statement because it's pretty massive. But the sort of you know, Thailand, the Southeast Asian countries, particularly China, Hong Kong, are just a hotbed of exciting running. I mean, so exciting runners coming, and we're starting to see them come to Europe. They train differently. They train, you know, in some of the most extreme and some of the most challenging terrain in the world, and they've sort of not been allowed to show their talent, but they're coming through, and I think we're going to start to see a much greater number of Chinese and Asian runners on the big stage. You know, Nepalese runners are coming through as well, and there's some really exciting talent. But one of the things about running in Asia is it didn't really exist as a pastime until relatively recently. And if you look in the UK, we have a long history of running going back decades, and we have icons of running, whether it be Roger Bannister or Ron Hill, or, you know, tons and tons of Seb Coe, you know, the runners, track and marathon runners over many, many years, Paula Radcliffe. They just don't have that in Asia. Running was something you did if you were late, and, you know, it wasn't a pastime. And maybe this is as a result of a growing middle classes in a lot of Asian countries, particularly in China, where, you know, there's a lot more wealth coming through. The population, I think, the middle class population of China by 2025 will be bigger than the whole population of Europe. So it's a lot of wealth. Growing wealth, there's a lot of desire to be for the trappings of the Western world. So if you go to Beijing or Shanghai, you know, the high streets are full of all the designer shops, and that's what the Chinese people want. But because there's none of this history, there's none of the hang-ups either. There's none of this, oh, am I a runner? You know, how far do I have to run to be a runner? All the sort of nonsense that often happens in the UK in particular, where, you know, people feel they have to achieve something before they they run, or they have to wear a certain something, or they, you know, there's all that sort of preconceived ideas. There's none, because 10 years ago, everyone ran to because they missed the bus. I've got a friend who lives in Kunming, who's Italian, and when she arrived there 5 or 6 years ago, she was running along, and taxis would pull up alongside her and go, "Get in, get in," and she'd be like, "Oh, I'm doing this for fun," which is crazy. But what it means is that there isn't, you know, everyone's buying. I mean, from a commercial standpoint, if you're a brand, you've got to be there, because no one owns a pair of trainers. No one's got the Farnham 10K 2006 T-shirt that they're still running around, you know, in the park. Got a few years left in it. No one's got any of that stuff. So, and everyone, because perception is so valuable, and what you look like is. And the trend, you know, to follow a trend in China is so important. The people are amazingly dressed. I loved it. I mean, like, the particularly the women, they'd be like head to toe in the same brand, and it'd be like multicolored neon, and they'd look amazing. I mean, there'd be no like slightly dog eaten, yeah, you know, or hot tights with holes in, or worn down trainers, and which I also love about the Brit, you know, the British culture is that, you know, you'll always stand next to somebody who's got their number with three pins and a, you know, something, or a bit of chewing gum or something, you know. Yeah, it's like, yeah, that sort of, there's always somebody, isn't there, in a race. You stand there and you're like, maybe just, you know, buy some bit of kit in the last 10 years. But it's all new, and they take running like very seriously, but in a really fun way. When I did Gaoligong, I watched the 50k race start, and it was a cross between like a Barry's boot camp and a nightclub and a rave, and they had fireworks and a theater, and this is the start of a 50k race. And they did like a group, a thousand runners did like a dancing and jumping in the air, and just fireworks are going off, and they're doing a sort of like keep fit class. And I'm thinking, 50k, if we did that in the UK, people would be like, what the, you know, the British sensibilities would be like, no, I'm not going to do that. Why would it? But no, they had, you know, fire breathers and things. It was nuts. And something really amazing about that, to see people who are just so excited to get out and run, I mean, quite a long way in the mountains on the border of Myanmar. And yeah. And so, I mean, they have a race called Alice in Wonder Trail, and it's a women's only race, apart from if you're a man and you want to be involved, you have to be a rabbit. And then the women chase the rabbit around the trails. I mean, and it's got like a manga themed character as this icon, which is this, you know, woman with sort of a Lara Croft with a sword type character. And it sells out, and it's just insane. And it's taken like this sort of manga Japanese sort of feel to running. And that's just like a couple of examples. And they have a international size race, you know, a 20,000-30,000 person race in tens of cities across China that we've never even heard of. I mean, it's massive. I mean, I don't think anyone had ever heard of Wuhan until, you know, 18 months ago. And then you find out it's a 10 million person city. And there's cities like that all across China, and they've got big road races, and they've got growing running cultures, and it's kind of ground zero. And that's sort of, so when you go there and you sort of have a perspective of your own running culture, it's amazing. It's just to see the difference, and you see where that could go without hang-ups of whether you're a runner or not, or whether no one goes, if you run like that, it's going to hurt your knees. You know, no one in China says that, because they don't have that sort of culture. And, you know, all those sorts of things that perhaps make running in the UK sort of a bit of a quirky thing and maybe put people off, doesn't exist because it's too new. And, you know, it's probably less because it doesn't have the culture in many regards. And I think, you know, the brilliant thing about British running and, you know, is that we have this rich culture of people who've done amazing things and emerging personalities, but it's kind of different, and that's kind of the attraction, I guess. So I don't know how easy it's going to be. It's never easy to go to China anyway, but I suspect we're going to see some of these races put on hold for a while until they work out what exactly happened. I mean, I was meant to do Gobi in the following year in 2019, and 2 days before I was meant to fly, I was told I wasn't allowed into the area that we were running because I was a Western runner. So, you know, China is unpredictable at the best of times. And so, but, you know, I think the big city marathons will continue. So that's maybe if people want to go to China and run, you know, get in Beijing, get entries into Beijing or Shanghai is the big one. It sells out very fast. It's meant to be stunning as a run. But it's a cool, the whole of the Asian continent has got lots of exciting stuff going on, and it's going to become, well, some of it's going to become more accessible, I think, as we get out of COVID and as the desire. There's a great desire out there for Chinese races in particular to have Westerners. It's all about the perception.
Are there any have you got any dream races out there that you want to do?
Well, there's a brilliant race that no one knows about.
Uh-oh.
Well, until now. this is my plug. No, I mean, it's called the Hong Kong Four Trails Ultra Challenge, and it's run by a guy called Andre Bloomberg, and it's super under the radar. It's all of the Hong Kong, the trails in Hong Kong run in the opposite direction to the way they naturally run. The idea is to do it in 60 hours. It's unsupported. It's 300 kilometers. It's nuts. I tried to do it in 20.
That's your kind of race, James. Isn't it? He was never going to say a 5K, was he?
No. But I get in this sort of hyperbole. So I'm fully, I can't criticize people because it's this crazy race. And you, at the end, if you get there within 60 hours, you kiss this traditional post box that's painted turquoise blue. And that's the kind of signal of the finish. And it's an insane race. And I went and gave it a shot. And it's in February. And the humidity is like low for Hong Kong, but for people down from Europe, it was just a disaster. I was sweating through after 5 kilometers, and at like 120 kilometers, I was like, "Nah, I'm done." And I was pretty disappointed with myself. But I don't know how you condition yourself for the humidity in coming from I think I was the only person from Europe that didn't live. There were some Europeans, but they all lived in Thailand or Hong Kong or one of the Asian countries surrounding it, and they were kind of used to it. So that's my excuse. But there's tons of stuff out there. I mean, the UTMB races that are out there now, the Panda Trail. I mean, Kate's got Kate Carter's name written all over it, surely. And that I don't know if that'll happen now because of the changes. But that's in a panda sanctuary. I mean, how good is that?
I like that you, in that previous race, you said you kiss the post box, because that kind of almost sounds like touching the wall of a pub, like on a famous round, or do you know what I mean? It's got elements of that to it.
And I think all those races that are like iconic have those things, like a Bob Graham round, or if you look at Hard Rock, right, you kiss the rock at the end. Spartathlon. After you've run 246 kilometers, you kiss the foot of Leonidas. I feel like those sort of challenges have that special thing about them, the special sauce that makes them really, really amazing. And they didn't tend to be about winning. They tend to be about complete. Obviously, there's always a winner at Hard Rock and a winner at Western States, but most people are just trying to get the damn thing done, especially when it's super long like that, and you just it's an achievement to get to the start line, and it's definitely achievement to get to the finish, whether you're first or last. And that, for me, that's the I think that's the, I love those races that have this sort of backstory to them and have more than I do the just get from point A to point B in the fastest time. So it's about the story, and about, because I think people are, I include myself in this, are more interesting than the time it takes them to go from one place to another. It's not as interesting as how they got, the journey to get to the start line and then the journey they take to get from point A to point B. But as a whole, I think in road running in particular, we're very focused on how many times have you run a marathon and how fast have you done it, rather than the qualitative things that are so much more interesting about people than their PBs. That's my opinion, but I get it. I'll probably make myself very unpopular by saying things like that, but counting the number of marathons I've done is not the most interesting thing about me, to be honest. And I can't think too many sports where the frequency of doing something is a reflection on, no one goes, "Oh, I've played 73 rounds of golf." I mean, they do go, I've got a handicap of X, but you know, mountain biking, no one goes, I've done 27 mountain bikes faces or something. No one cares. It's about like, and the enjoyment of the thing. But we seem to, in running, seem to, and I include, you know, include myself in this, I'm guilty of that as well, of comparing ourselves, you know, of using it to directly compare ourselves to somebody else, when the beauty is in the doing and the journey, the being, the stories, rather than the finish line.
Agreed. James, thanks so much for coming on the Runner's World podcast. Great to talk to you about running in China and Asia, and wish you all the best of luck with the next challenge.
Thanks, guys. You too. Love the podcast. Keep up the good work.
So that brings us to the end of this week's Runner's World podcast. Thanks very much to our guest, James Poole, and to you, of course, for listening.
You can, of course, subscribe to Runner's World magazine and get 12 issues throughout the year to supplement your running journey. But if you want a little taster, you can subscribe to just 3 issues of Runner's World for £5. Head over to hearstmagazines.co.uk/runnersworldpodcast to get this exclusive listener offer.
You can listen to the Runner's World podcast on Acast, iTunes and all your favourite podcast apps. Just search Runner's World UK and click subscribe. And please do subscribe, because it makes us really happy. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you again next week.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.